Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Ascension Secrets of Saint Germain show. This is Troika Saint Germain. And this evening, I have a very... I have a guest this evening. It was kind of a serendipitous sort of thing. About an hour and a half before the show, I thought, oh, my goodness, tonight's my radio show. You know, what am I going to talk about? And I started kind of tuning in as to what Saint Germain wanted me to speak about. And he said, call Leia. Ask Leia to be on your show. So I went, okay, and Leia's on the East Coast, so, you know, it's 11 o'clock for her. And I called, and I got her answering machine, and I thought, oh, well, she's gone. But I left a message anyway, and about 15, 20 minutes later, she called. She goes, I'd love to be on the show. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to one of my darling friends that I have never met face-to-face, but we have become great friends. And she does these incredible energy portraits, and we're going to tell you in a minute what that has to do with ascension. But let me introduce you to Leia Bowden, B-O-W-D-E-N. And hello, Leia.
Hello, Troika. It is such a pleasure. I believe in serendipity.
Yes.
And especially when we're dealing with higher mind, it always works out right.
It does. I mean, when I got your answering machine, I thought, so much for this message, you know, call Leia. But then when you called back, I went, see, it all worked.
it was just perfect.
It was perfect. And it was great fun. And let me tell people that you do these beautiful, colorful, decorative, gorgeous, spirit-interpreted energy portraits. And you did one for me, and you did one for my darling Valentino.
Right.
And so I want you to explain to people how you got into it. What started the whole energy portrait?
Okay, it's my favorite topic. I have learned through byregion.net, which is doing a website optimization, mm-hmm. that not many people even think of the phrase energy portrait, much less search on it.
Right.
And I've come to be aware that when people think of what it is I do, they might be thinking more of a soul portrait or a visual and audio soul reading or even a chakra portrait.
Mm-hmm.
I see the energy flow that swirls around people, that descends around people, that flows within people. And I not only see it. Well, in the beginning, when I began doing these in 1997, I just saw them. But as time has gone by, I realized that I'm entering a hologram when I open myself to the energy flow. And now I see it, and I hear it, and I feel it. And what I do is to prepare myself by making sacred space in my studio or wherever I'm doing it, and then turn on my tape recorder, because I've learned that sometimes as soon as I begin keying my own intuition toward the other person's being, whether they're in my studio with me or long distance, because I do a lot of them, like I did yours.
Well, right. We've never met face to face. We're 3,000 yeah. miles away from each other.
That's right. And so sometimes I begin receiving messages or song or chant before I even sit down with the pastel and paper in front of me,
mm-hmm.
so that while I'm lighting the incense and lighting the candles, the person's own higher and multidimensional panoply of selves presents itself to me, and I begin receiving what the person needs to know why they're there. So I started doing this in, about 1997. I have a very dear friend named Gary who, as soon as we met, realized that we were going to be art partners. And he's a facilitator of energy release like nobody I've ever experienced.
Mm-hmm.
He had been working on me for about 5 years every week, energy healing, and said, you know, I got something going on in my system. I want you to look in my field and see what you see. after we're done working on you. And I thought, what is he, nuts? I don't see energy. He's the one who sees energy. And this really keys into what we're, you know, about the topic of ascension.
Mm-hmm.
We limit ourselves by the stories that we've accepted about what we can and cannot do.
Oh, definitely.
You know? So, and I think most people by now who are feeling their way through the layers into the more of the light really know that. So I sat there and I said, well, and you know how it is. If you do intuitive work, you feel like you're making it up.
Especially in the beginning, yes, until you start getting a lot of validation.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And so I said what I thought was there, and he said, yes, and go on, and go on, and go on. And then he said, okay, next week I want you to paint it. And that's how I started doing the energy portraits, is simply allowing myself to say an inner yes to the probability that that blue thing that I'm sensing really is blue.
Uh-huh.
And if someone said, well, don't you think it's really pink? I would say, no, it's really blue.
Or at least it's blue for me.
It's blue for me, that's right. And one of the ways that I do the energy portraits is 20 years ago, God, more than 20 years ago, I began reading whatever there was to read about subtle energy and psychic phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
And I read the Ledbetter books, and I read whatever anyone had written.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you could go into a bookstore and there were maybe 10 books that you could find.
Yeah.
So I do have a background in the classic patterns and colors of the chakras, but I do my best not to think about those patterns when I'm working on someone's portrait, because sometimes they're not the classic patterns.
Well, when you're doing a soul thing, we're going beyond. See, those classic colors belong to the physical body.
Right.
Not to the I am presence of that person or the higher self of that person. You know, the sky's the limit on color patterns and probabilities in that realm. Doesn't follow the classic rainbow progression.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And the more I work on people, the more prevalent I'm seeing evidence of off-planet aspects being very important in the flow right now,
mm-hmm.
and also angelic and divine aspects. I'm seeing a lot of white and metallic gold.
Mm-hmm.
And I know whenever I'm impulsed to use any metallic color, it indicates that there is off-planet consciousness very present.
That's interesting. I think I remember you did mentioning that to you the metallics is off planet. Because it was a couple of years ago that you did Tina and mine, and we both had silvers and golds and things. But see, to me, I work with the golden energy, and it's like a metallic gold, and I work with that all the time. I start out with the violet flame and the deep violets, and then I transmute things into the golden, this beautiful 24-karat gold, this metallic gold light. And that's what I bring into myself and into, you know, whoever I'm doing a healing or a meditation with.
Right.
And more I just work with the violet and the gold. And of course, those are Saint Germain's colors. And I figured that I was being drawn to work with the gold because of the golden age coming in. And in my understanding, the golden light, that metallic golden light, is the Christ consciousness.
Yes, so, I agree with you.
Tell me more about the off-planet connection with it.
Okay. The gold, when I see metallic gold,
mm-hmm.
especially that 24-karat rich gold.
Yes.
That's divine authority. That's God, Goddess, Creator energy.
All that is,
All that is in the highest, purest form of the highest, purest. We can't even talk about it, think about it.
Right.
And
I also refer to it as the light of God that never fails.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. So when I see that color, I know that's That's the divine, pure and simple.
Mm-hmm.
But I, and I, the colors that I see and when I see and feel them that are angelic tend to be white and especially a pearly white.
Yes,
the pearly gates. Pearly white.
The mother of pearl. Ray, yeah.
And then there are other, the other metallic colors I get are a metallic turquoise, a metallic sky blue, a metallic green, metallic pink. I get a, it's interesting, I sometimes get a lot of metallic copper in a person's root chakra. Especially people who are really grounded, not so much in the earth in terms of the energy that's moving through them to help them flow along their path, but are grounded in other dimensions. And the other dimensions show up as these off-planet colors.
Interesting.
It is fascinating. And the other and first indication that I ever had in my work of off-planet presence was the appearance of anything geometric.
Yes, the symbols, yeah.
The symbols, the even the shapes, triangles, squares, rectangles, perfect circles, you know, things that are not, things that are regular.
Right.
That in, and this indicates, I also get that the off-planet consciousness is devoid of the emotional content. And devoid is sort of a negative word. I mean, we have all these emotions running around us because of our animal bodies. It's part of the animal body, that, as I see it, as I experience it. And when you're gone, when the animal body has stopped, then your portrait would be, and I have done one portrait, of a two portraits actually of someone who had passed over, and the colors were all metallic pastels, whites, pinks, blues.
Yeah, beautiful.
And this one woman whose portrait I was doing at the request of her granddaughter, at the very bottom, when she was giving a message, and she, as I was writing, she was giving a message, and she was talking about the memories and what keeps her still loving and wanting to send this message to her granddaughter. And the colors got much more vivid because they had to do with memories of Earth, Earth life.
Yes, whereas the pastels are more etheric and more of the higher realm.
Yeah, that's been my experience.
Yeah, well, speaking of, you know, about the, you said the emotions pretty much belong to the animal body, or what I call the unit or the spacesuit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Or the automobile or whatever. The in, you know, we're incarnated. So it's
yes,
our,
so that's good.
The little cars we're driving around is in this dimension or our bodies.
Right.
Saint Germain, you know, has told me that the secret to ascension, or one of the secrets to the ascension, is you must, the 90% of the work to ascend is clearing the emotional body, clearing yourself of emotion. Of you know, the kind of emotions that hold you down. And so it's interesting that what, you know, what you just said, it's a similar thing.
Yeah.
So these portraits tie in to ascension. How would you say they tie into ascension, maybe for a person receiving one of your portraits or commissioning one for themselves?
When I tune into the person's energy flow and multidimensional self, because of who I am, I tune into the aspects which are creating balance and drawing someone along their path to the completion of things that they came here to finish, drawing people into the possibilities that they have been afraid to approach, pulling people up into the large story that their soul has created for themselves, through many lifetimes, or if you look at it as a multidimensional, eternal one moment,
right,
then through the many stories that we create. My experience of how the ascension happens through the energy portraits is that the energy portrait experience, both if the person is present in the studio and going through the process with me, or if the person then listens to the tape later and looks at the portrait and allows it to sink in,
mm-hmm,
the portrait shows people, this is what people have said to me, shows them something they've always thought might be present in them or true for them, but they've never seen it before. They've never been able to get a handle on exactly what was going on, and it allowed them to sort of get a hand up,
mm-hmm,
and clear out many things. Also,
like a roadmap.
A roadmap, and also like literally finding a thread that you can follow.
Mm-hmm.
And all you have to do then is follow the thread. You don't have to worry about digging a new road.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I've heard people tell me that that the portraits, when I touch the portrait in a certain place, they'll feel a tingle. One woman who I was working on, who is a Reiki master, said when I was all done, she said, "Oh, I felt everywhere you were looking."
Hmm.
So the gaze itself, the energy itself, stimulates the aura, and can also function as sort of a shower, a cleansing agent.
Mm-hmm.
The ascension happens because also, as I'm working on a chakra that feels unhappy,
mm-hmm,
closed, afraid, or any other of a number of qualities that tell me I'm hiding.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'll see particularly a throat or a solar plexus, this little feeling I'm hiding. And so before I paint it, I open my heart especially to that one place. And I invite it like you do a little child.
To come
You're
out
so
and play.
Beautiful. Yeah. You're so beautiful. Everything you've done is perfect. Nothing has been your fault.
Mm-hmm.
And all it's like a soul retrieval in a little way. Mm-hmm. I am not saying I do soul retrievals. I don't. But the idea that you're bringing a part of that person back into full play.
Mm-hmm.
And that, too, allows someone to shake off a restraint.
Mm-hmm.
And often the messages themselves are messages from what feels like mother love.
Uh-huh.
Or in the sense of a group soul, the group soul will speak and say, you know, my darling dearest, you have been with us all this time and you're still there. All you have to do is step forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're here to catch you. And that sort of wonderful encouragement helps someone ascend into their fuller potential.
Right. Great.
Yeah.
Well, I want to maybe talk about the experience of having you paint Tino.
Oh, yes.
And Tino's my fabulous, wonderful Valentino Mikhail dog that I've talked about before on the show.
Mm.
And because also, too, I want the listeners to know about, I mentioned in the last show that he was going through some health challenges, and we communicated back and forth about that and what you said and the validation that I gave you and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's an interesting way that it works, but also I want the listeners to know how in tune you really are without knowing anything.
That's right.
Because I never told anybody what the doctors diagnosed Valentino with, because those that listened to the show last week, I was talking about the collective consciousness's ideas and people's idea of something really affecting you. And if you... I was talking about age, you know, and if you tell someone you're 70, they expect 70 to be a certain way, and they lock you. They lock you into that concept,
right?
And that makes it harder for you to rejuvenate. And same thing with illnesses. You know, when you name something, people have their concept of what that condition is, and you know, hold you into, oh, poor thing, they're going to die any minute, or,
yep.
Oh, well, that's not so bad, you know. It's like the difference between, you know, a cold and some really horrible-sounding disease. So I've never mentioned what Tino has. I didn't want anyone to lock him into that. So anyway, let's talk about what happened when you painted Tino's portrait.
Okay. Well, when I painted Tino's, I found the email that I sent you after you were asking for a healing.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
So I did find that, and we can talk about that.
Good.
If you'd like. When you asked me to paint Tino's portrait, I was so delighted. I got the photograph that you sent me in the mail of this magnificent German Shepherd dog.
That's the word I always use for him, is magnificent.
Really?
Yes, I mean, he is truly magnificent. That's the word that almost everybody uses to describe him.
And
he has that air about him that he is just magnificent and majestic and just...
You know, tonight, when you called me,
uh-huh.
I had just tuned in, unfortunately late, to a broadcast on PBS of The Magic Flute, which is... just about my favorite opera. I know it's not complicated and complex. It's gorgeous, and it was using it's their most recent production. Anyway, my favorite aria in that is anything Sarastro sings. He is the priest of the mm-hmm. sun cult. And Tino feels like that to me.
Mm.
A magnificent, if he had a human voice to me, Tino would have this marvelous bass, slow, majestic.
Well, he does have a bass bark. I wouldn't call him a tenor.
No. So when I set out to paint him, first of all, I felt his spirit immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I painted him, I wasn't surprised by what I was seeing. It was lovely. And then, even before I painted him, I think I'd mentioned to you that I thought there was going to be another being who would appear in his... And I just had this feeling. And so as I'm painting, I'm thinking, oh, well, it will or it won't. And all of a sudden, there was a figure that came up and appeared standing below him so that if, let's say, Tino is 3 feet high sitting down
mm-hmm.
as he's, you know, sitting on his haunches, this other being seemed to be about a foot and a half high.
Mm-hmm.
And the being was clearly joyful, lighthearted, benevolent, playful, a bit coyote-ish
mm-hmm.
in the Native American sense of coyote.
Right.
And had a very twinkly personality. And as he started to appear, it was like he was having a running dialogue with me and wanting to distract me and just saying cute little silly things.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, this is probably a caretaker helper that Tino has.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it was time for me to actually draw this figure, this helper, wonderful being, he said to me, the being said, wait a minute, I want to change. As if he was going to go upstairs and put on another set of clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. I don't remember exactly what I saw at first and then what I ended up painting,
mm-hmm.
but it felt to me like first I saw someone wearing a suit of green clothes,
mm-hmm.
and then he came back and he was all blue and purple or
mm-hmm.
something, although I don't remember the colors exactly.
A purple cape. And
right.
a staff.
Oh, a staff, yes.
Remember?
That's right.
And you had asked him when he showed up, you know, oh, who are you? Oh, he told you that he wanted to be painted, remember?
Yes.
And you said, well, who are you? And do you remember what he said?
He said, oh, she'll know.
Exactly.
You would know.
She'll know.
Right. So I thought that, well, maybe it's Saint Germain. But again, like as it is with my not wanting to try to second guess the colors mm-hmm. that I'm going to see in someone's flow, I try not to second guess the
who and what
that comes into a portrait. You know, the only other time, let's see, I have done some more animal portraits, but the one that I remember is a horse that I met on Hawaii last winter. She had jumped over a fence and really gouged her chest. It was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
She was really terribly frightened when she did this to herself. And so I was working with her, and she also had a companion being.
Mm.
And this beautiful horse, whose name is Lehualani.
Mm-hmm.
Lehualani actually was expressing some of the emotions of her companion being. So it was a very different situation than the situation with Tino's companion being.
Mm-hmm.
And
of course, when I got the portrait, you know, I had already known that this little mystery guest was going to be there.
That's right.
So that was the first thing I looked at is, where's the mystery guest? And I looked and I went, oh, it's Saint Germain. I did know immediately it was him. And he showed up in his little Merlin costume, one of his Merlin costumes.
That's right.
It was very charming. But anyway, so with the difficulties that Tina was going through, I sent you and quite a few people that mm-hmm. I know just a very simplistic email that Tina was having some challenges, and I was, you know, encouraging people to pray for him and hold him in perfect health and all of that.
That's right.
And then you tell everyone what you wrote me.
All right. So when I got that, I just sat with myself for just like 10 seconds, and immediately I began working with a new image of myself that represented some healing for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, I saw how there is a substance in me that's easily accessible by any other being that wishes to access what I offer. And so I moved, this is what I wrote to you. I move my divine body close to Tino and invite his being to take whatever is useful. He immediately draws some of the bright gold substance that precedes me,
mm-hmm.
that is part of my divine being that sort of goes in front of me. And I see his paws immediately shining bright with gold. He moves it up into his left hind leg, into his anus, and into his pancreas, although I had a question about
a question
pancreas,
mark after
because
pancreas.
It might have been another organ, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, there is a drawing up of the substance that I'm offering into his belly, which is too tender to accept the full strength of the gold. And so he takes a pink and white light into his stomach, where it suffuses through his abdomen.
Mm-hmm.
There is a low singing which vibrates comfortably in his body, holding him and with your head on his ribs, singing, humming a low, simple, repetitive chant makes him feel better. He is holding his feelings in check, being very stalwart. He is such a general.
Mm-hmm. And then I wrote back to you what you didn't know at
mm-hmm.
that time is that every night when we would go to bed, I would run violet flames through his body, and particularly into the parts that were challenged. And then I would run the gold through. So he's very used to that golden light, that golden energy. And so here he grabs that gold from you.
That's right.
He's very familiar to it. And he drew it up into his left hind leg.
Uh-huh.
That's where his biopsy was, and he had stitches. He had just had a biopsy, and his leg was, you know, still stitched up. So that was an immediate sore and wound in his, you know, viewpoint. So he took the gold right there first. You had no way of knowing.
No,
he had a left leg biopsy.
Right.
And then his stomach was very upset and tender because he had spent a full 4 weeks on antibiotics, a very high dosage of antibiotics, and he was, you know, queasy. I mean, those things are just horrible. But his condition was acute enough and really serious that he had to have the antibiotics. Now he's on natural remedies and is doing much better. And stuff. And the little low singing and humming. When I sing to him. I've done that through both of his embodiments, and that was a key clue when he came back into this embodiment of identifying him. He's sort of like the doggy llama, I call him. He passed all these different tests like the llamas do.
Yes, that's right.
When he was just a little itty bitty puppy and stuff, and so singing is something, and it's almost like a chant that I just kind of sing his name over and over again with a few little, you know, phrases in between and stuff. But when I read that, I thought, oh, I'm going to do that to him tonight. So I did. I laid my head right on his ribs. And I started singing his little, you know, Valentino Mikhail.
Oh, that's lovely.
And he just really responded and stuff. And then he wrote a second one back that you said, you wrote me a few days later and said, how's Tino doing? He seems
he seemed more perkier. I didn't use the word perky.
No, you used interesting words. One was more lisp. Anyway, he was improving. And
yes.
And then tonight when we talked, you said that you saw him as all turquoise.
Yes, and I still do.
Yeah. And, you know, and we talked for a second about turquoise, and I said, well, what does turquoise mean to you? And you said, what creative regeneration?
When I see turquoise in anyone's flow, I grok it to be a presence of very innovative, innovative creativity, as the Indigo children are tremendously innovative and creative.
Mm-hmm.
As a whole, suffusing energy around, I would say it's just tremendously healing, keeping almost as if it's blocking old tapes from getting a hold again on tissue and creating a barrier in that way, so that what is fresh and new and not brought in before can have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And I found the email when I asked. I said, how is Tino? He seems to be a lot more flexible and live, L-I-T-H-E.
Yes, L-I-T-H-E, that was him.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and then I mentioned that in the Native American tradition, turquoise is the master healer.
That's right.
That stone, the turquoise stone, is always thought of as the master healer. But then later on, I remembered an experience that I had, because I'm an artist too, not the same type as you, but you know, I deal in color and things all the time. And I remember one time, I accidentally, mixed violet and green together. And do you know what comes out when you mix violet and green together?
No, I don't.
Turquoise.
Really?
I was shocked, because if you think about it logically, you would think that green and violet would make a really mucky, yucky, brownie kind
of
ugly
the red
color
involved in the violet.
Yes, it comes out a beautiful turquoise. And of course, you know, Tino is of the violet ray, like I am, and so we have all this violet around us. But since he's been going through this thing, I've been, besides the golden energy, using a lot of green around him for, you know, vibrant health and physical healing and stuff. So that was another thing I thought of. Well, of course he'd be turquoise. He's got purple and green mixed together.
Oh, true.
And then I had this interesting dream this morning, right before I woke up, and this man was handing me this adorable, tiny, little 6-week-old puppy that looked exactly like Tino. And he said, you know, here he is. and or look what I have for you. Here he is. And I looked and I looked at Tino, this little puppy, and I said, but he's not dead. Why is he a new puppy? Or he didn't die. Why is he a new puppy? And after I woke up, and I've been kind of contemplating that all day, because when I was going through my really worried part mm-hmm. and falling into the third dimensional illusion every now and then, I would have dreams about him dying mm-hmm. and then coming back as a puppy. And I chose that to be my fears playing out rather than prophecy.
Right.
I didn't want him to die.
No, right.
But with this one, it was clearly different. It was because in the dream I kept saying, but why is he a puppy? He didn't die. He's still here. Why is he a puppy?
Uh-huh.
And I realized today that he, in a way, is having a rebirth. Or,
yes.
You know, and that through this illness and through what's going on, he's reinventing himself, and he's a new puppy. He's a new child.
Well, that makes perfect sense.
And it makes sense, too,
turquoise.
With what you just said about the
exactly.
turquoise.
Something new, something a new set of patterns emerging.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all, I mean, he's really, like, hidden by this turquoise glow. And that's an unusual thing for me to see.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there is this aura of protection around him now that's turquoise.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to talk a little bit more about ascension.
Okay.
And
why don't we tell people what your website is and how to get a hold of you?
Oh, what a wonderful idea.
Before we forget, because we've got about 18 minutes left.
Okay. It's real simple. EnergyPortraits.com. EnergyPortraits.com.
Yeah.
And
you do workshops and classes from time to time, too.
I teach workshops.
Do a commercial for yourself, girl.
Okay, here I go. I teach people. I not only do energy portraits, which capture in audio tape and in a beautiful pastel painting on black paper, the energy flow around your body, around your soul, generated by your soul and your soul's mission. But I also teach people how to access the place within where we can all see and feel the radiant being that we are or someone else is if our focus is on someone else.
Mm-hmm.
It's really so simple. The way you choose to express whatever you see is sort of up to you.
Yes.
But it all begins with that allowing the self to surrender to the updraft within which we all live, but society and our teachers and our well-meaning parents, or God forbid, parents who are not well enough to mean well for
mm-hmm.
their children, religion, society is held together by rules which are all conspiring to keep us from the easy drift up into that updraft.
Right.
And so what I do in the intuitive and healing art of energy portraiture, which is the class I teach, and it can take anywhere from 2.5 hours to 4 hours, depending on the specific exercises people want to do,
mm-hmm.
I simply lead people through a beautiful guided visualization, which, by the way, I sell on my website for $15,
mm-hmm.
And take them through the guided visualization, which when I do it in person for a group always changes a bit because of the nature of
the group dynamics, right.
The people who are there, what they need to hear. And then I give them paper and the pastels that I use, and the very last part of the meditation is, now you will see this incredibly beautiful, totally loving being who has been following you and who is now standing in front of you ready to embrace and enfold you. Allow yourself to see and feel and hear and be loved by this beautiful radiant being, and very gently and slowly open your eye and allow your hands to pick up whatever pastel stick your hand moves toward. If you were seeing blue and your hand picks up pink, go with the pink. Your body will never make a mistake. What we interpret may be different than what we are feeling, but let your body choose the colors, and then you create the portrait. And then I have people, when I'm dealing with a writer's group, like I teach every year for the International Women's Writing Guild that meets in Saratoga Springs at Skidmore College in June, that's International Women's Writing Guild, a fabulous organization. People meet each other for the first time and pick up threads of conversation that they've been waiting for all their lives. When I teach there, I then have people write from the energy, from the consciousness of the being whose energy portrait that they've created. I could go on for ages, but I won't. You're really asking for trouble when you ask me to promote myself. When I used to just be an artist, painting pictures of whatever, you'd have to sort of twist my arm.
But it was hard to promote, right?
It was impossible to promote. Now you can't shut me up.
I've, you know, I had the same experience because I've been self-employed or doing things that, oh gosh, since 1980. I quit my last real job in 1980.
Oh, how I admire you.
And so I've always had a profession. You know, I was a graphic designer. I did interior design for a while. I had murder mysteries and audience participation murder mystery plays and things that were very promotable, but yet same thing. You get, and I'm not a person that's shy about talking about pretty much of anything, but it was very hard for me to promote myself and things that I did. And I was in advertising. I could promote anybody else and did, but when it came to me, all of a sudden I became very mousy and quiet. But now that my business, if we call it a business, and in a way it is, but it's my mission, my life mission, is my association with Saint Germain and the products that he brings forth for me to, you know, present. And I'm doing ascension sessions and things like that. It's the same way. I can promote that. I can talk about it in a way that I never could talk about things that I did on my own.
Right.
And so I know exactly what you mean. I think that's true for all of us. When we really find our mission our real purpose for being here, we know that, yes, it's something that we're doing, but it's beyond what we're doing. It's beyond who we are.
Right. When we allow ourselves to be what the divine in us wants to be, then it really flows.
Yes, and you have no problem talking about it because you know it's higher than your third dimensional self. You know,
oh yes,
and stuff. And so it's easy to talk about and easy to promote. And so I know exactly what you mean.
Yes, that's right. And you have a sense that it really is good for people.
Well, you know it is.
You know it is.
Because,
that's right.
Yeah, because you know where it's coming from and what it does and the joy that it brings you. And I'm sure that you get constant glowing reports from people that you've done their portraits and how it's changed them and helped them.
Yes, it is remarkable. I'm overwhelmed sometimes by what people tell me. And it's enough that when I do the portraits, I'm in heaven. I mean, I ascend into that part of me that can function through the open heart. In fact, that can only function through the open heart.
Right.
And, boy, you know, it's really interesting? I have been diagnosed with a condition of the physical heart that may require open heart surgery. And I'm not scared because I know that this is all my tune-up. Hi, ready to move into your healing now? Ready to move into more of who you really are? Well, we need to tune you up. But I'm so aware that as I talk about the work that I do coming from an open heart, and I consider what I may have brought into myself to require on a physical level, it's really great to think about.
Gosh, you know, Leah, I'm going through a very similar thing. Only it's not my heart, it's my eyes.
Ooh.
Because I've been one from my childhood that sees the other dimensions. And what's happened to me is I'm losing my eyesight, my third dimensional eyesight. And this has been going on for quite a while. I have a very serious cataract in my left eye. And I've had it for quite a few years. And it, of course, it wasn't serious when it was first diagnosed, but it, but about 5 years ago, my eye doctor said, okay, it's time for you to go and have the surgery. And here's the surgeon. You know, tell him I, you know, referred you. I've already told him about you. Well, that was 5 years ago. And I talked to that surgeon at that time, but then I chose not to go. And then I talked to him about 2 years ago and also chose not to go because I was convinced that I would be able to heal it myself, you know, to raise my frequency above the level that, that that condition could still maintain. Or to do it with prayers, or to do it with, you know, supplements and herbs and all of this. Well, you know, I've I've tried everything that I know to do in the past 5 years, and it just it was getting gradually worse, but not really badly. And then it would get a little better, and you know, just enough to give me a little hope to hang on and stuff. And then about 2 weeks ago, it just exploded into total blindness. I can see little, just little bits of light and dark, but I can't distinguish objects or anything. And I'm thinking, you know, and all along, I'm thinking, gosh, if I'm this, because you know, I have that negative talk going on in my head, just like everybody else.
Sure, we all do.
And I have this, well, if you're such a hot shot, you know, high being from another dimension and another planet, why can't you do this, you know? And then I would feel, then another voice in my head would go, gosh, I guess I'm just not any good after all. I can't heal my own cataract. And you know, and then there's another part of me that's like, keep going, you can do it. You know, all these voices back and forth over this thing. And, of course, my thoughts that if I couldn't do it, I was a failure. You know, and how can I talk about ascension and how can I, you know, talk about healing and this and that if I can't do it
well
for myself. But what I also realized, too, is that everything is God, including surgery. That's why it's been created. And I was spending so much time and energy trying to do that when a simple operation would take care of it immediately, and I would have that time and energy that I was putting towards the eyes, towards trying to see again, to something more constructive, you know, like actually ascending.
Yes.
So yesterday I went in to see the eye doctor for the surgery consultation, and of course he's telling me, you waited too long, now it's going to be a very complicated surgery and all of that, but I have it, I'm getting it done on February 1st.
Oh, good. I'll send you lots of good energy.
Thank you. It's
so
the full moon, too. So there'll be a lot of energy.
That'll be great. And what I'm seeing is that there are going to be some off-planet technicians who are already lifting the cataract.
Well, you know, once, you know, since yesterday when I couldn't, my eye was so bad and the cataract was so cloudy and so dense, they could not penetrate with light or sound to get a picture of what size lens to use in the operation, you know, because they have to fit the artificial lens perfectly and know which size. But, you know, and so, I mean, this poor woman was so frustrated. She spent a half an hour trying to get, you know, a simple little click of the computer camera and never did succeed. But since then, I am seeing better out of this eye.
Yes, that's great.
You know, and I think by the time I have the surgery, which is a week from tomorrow, who knows, maybe I won't even need the operation.
That's very possible because...
And I think it might, you know, it is a possibility, and it might be that I had to go and have a doctor and all these examinations and all that as proof to show that a week later it doesn't exist anymore.
That's right, and that could very well be.
And wouldn't that blow people's minds?
Yep, because what I'm seeing is that your eye isn't damaged, but there's this covering that you've been operating under.
Mm-hmm.
And just think, you've had all this time to do some searching.
Well, I know that at a certain point in this lifetime, when I was still quite young and the veils hadn't come down yet, you know, when you see the other dimensions, you see the good, the bad, and the ugly, as well as the heavenly, divine, and you know.
Yes.
And as a little girl, I know that at a point I consciously said, I don't want to see this anymore.
Oh, my goodness.
And I know that in other lifetimes I have said that, please, I don't want to see this anymore. So, you know, what we say does manifest.
There is a book written by an author whose name I can't remember, but I met her, and I'm sorry I can't remember. The name of the book is Your Body Believes Every Word You Say.
Oh, everything you say, of course it does.
Yeah. Well, I wish you the best of everything for your operation, and especially that you shouldn't need the operation. Hopefully.
Yeah, that would be great. But I feel, too, that if I do have the operation, either way, that whether it's through an operation or through its miraculous, you know, divine help of a reversal of this, that whichever way, this new sight, being able to see again, is going to be more than just a third dimensional removal of a cataract.
Oh, yes.
Just like you're talking about with your heart, it's going
to
be a whole rebirth of many talents and many forms of seeing on all dimensions and all levels.
That's
you know, the
right.
Word...
And so much of what I'm reading now through various newsletters, especially through your newsletter and through some of the other channel material that I'm getting and reading, we're in it now, baby.
Oh, this is the time of miracles.
This is it.
That's what I've been saying. I made up a new little mantra that I say every day. And Tino always is the initiator. You know, I can put up with a lot of crap for myself, but I refuse to have him suffer, and or me suffer by losing him. And so he's my motivator, you know, to make changes and stuff. And so I started just really changing my whole, another level of changing my thoughts and how I view things and stuff. And I created this little saying that I say every day. And I go, and I recommend other people try this because it really works. I say, this is the age of miracles. I believe in miracles. I ask for a miracle, and I expect a miracle. And it's really cool. And I just am incorporating, you know, so many people have seen The Secret and are understanding the law of attraction. So what you talk about and the words that you use is what you attract to yourself. I was giving this little talk at Whole Life Expos and stuff back in the 80s. So I've been talking about the power of words and language and thought for, gosh, 26 years now, 27
That's
years.
That's right.
But,
That's
you know,
right.
So now everything I say is, oh, what a miracle, and oh, what a blessing. Well, you get all my emails. You know, I always sign it blessings, Troika.
Yes, and so do I. It feels so good to do that.
Yes, because, you know, you're wishing blessings to everybody, and that brings them to you, too, as well.
That's right.
And so now I'm using the word miracles a lot. Yeah, magic and miracles.
Great.
And even changed my answering machine, and now it says, please enjoy this magical day of miracles.
That's wonderful, because that invites people to
think about
more.
It. Sure.
Yes, and to open themselves to that.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Oh, gosh, we've got 18 seconds.
18 seconds. Okay.
I have loved having you on this show. I encourage everyone to go visit Leah's website and visit my website and the newsletter that Leah was talking about, who is also a contributing author for that website, is onespirit.com, the number one spirit.com. Go to that website, sign up to be on the newsletter, and I will see everyone next week. And thank you so much, Leah, and Violet, blessings to you all. Good night.
Thank you, Trinka.
Thank you.
Blessings, everybody.
So we have to hang up now to stop the show.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Thank you so much.
Okay.